Facebook wants to know what's on your mind. Twitter wants you to compose a new tweet. Pinterest wants to see your latest craft project. And Instagram wants to know what you're eating, or maybe what you're wearing. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We have a lot of new ways to share information online, so it's not surprising that some of us are oversharing. This hour, I'll talk about social media etiquette with Andrew High, an assistant professor at the University of Iowa's Department of Communication Studies, and Nathan Wright, founder of Lava Row, a digital media consulting firm in Des Moines. We also want to hear from you. What drives you crazy online? What's the biggest mistake you've made in social media? Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Social media has given us all kinds of new ways to interact with our friends, family, and of course, also complete strangers. This hour, we'll talk about the positives and negatives of sharing our lives online. We also want to hear from you. What drives you crazy online? What's the biggest mistake you've ever made using social media? What makes you unfriend someone or hide someone from your feed? You can get in touch with us by phone, 866-780-9100. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Or, of course, you can use social media. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can post on our Facebook page. With me today, Andrew High. He is an assistant professor at the University of Iowa's Department of Communication Studies. Hello, Andrew. Hi, Andrew. Are you there?
I am here.
All right. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Also with us is Nathan Wright, founder of Lava Row, a digital media consulting firm in Des Moines. Hi, Nathan.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
And I want to start with a question that I think a lot of us ponder online. Is there a difference between personal online and professional online? And Andrew, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think there is a big difference between personal and professional online. I think that there's both in the popular press as well as some scholarly research saying that there's some big differences between the things that people post. And although there's the potential for the two to get muddled, your personal and professional life, I think that can often have bad consequences for people, right? The sort of obvious examples being people who, we hear all the time about people who are being fired and people who aren't getting jobs because they're posting something on their Facebook or tweeting a picture or putting something on Instagram or something that, then just happens to be found by a prospective employer, their boss or something like that. And, people are saying, well, hey, this is my account. This is my space to post what I want. But then clearly people are saying, well, no, that's not necessarily the case because you're not representing yourself in a way that the company would want or something like that. And so, and I think more and more people are, really trying to appreciate the difference of, okay, what I'm posting here personally, what I might want to, show might not necessarily be the same thing that I would want to show in my professional life. And that there may be, different places or different levels of security you can enact to make sure that there's a line drawn between what's personal and professional. So, yeah, I do think there's a pretty important difference to be conscious of.
And, Nathan, when you advise people, what do you tell them about keeping their personal identity and their professional identity separate online?
Well, of course, certainly be aware of privacy settings and knowing those controls. And you really have to, most people have to work hard to find out that stuff on social networks. It's not the most obvious tool set out there. So being aware of those. But I also think that the personal and professional has always been muddled, has always been blended throughout time. And humans should just move forward with sort of one presence online. And I run into a lot of college students that are stressed about needing possibly two or three Twitter accounts. Here's my professional Twitter. Here's my and personal one for just me and my friends. And I really don't think you need to do that. I think you can be one human being and then sort of move forward and in moderation in terms of what you share and just be conscious that what you put online can and will be permanent and shared later on.
Okay, so it sounds like you're saying everything can impact you professionally. No
yes.
matter where it's posted and
exactly.
how private you think it is.
Correct.
So it sounds like you both have a little bit of a different approach to that idea, Andrew.
Yeah, but at the same time, I completely agree, because I've seen people who have professional and personal accounts, or account for my friends, accounts for my, you know, family, accounts for professional contacts, and I think it's a bit short-sighted to assume that, you know, just because you have one group of friends partitioned into a certain account, that they wouldn't look for you or try to find out, you know, if you're available otherwise. You know, I think people have a pretty clear idea that the norms and the type of things that people are posting on Twitter, Facebook, whatever it is. And I think, okay, well, this doesn't seem right. I wonder if they have another account. You know, it seems like very businesslike to me. What are they doing personally? And, you know, it's, you know, my given name is Andrew High, but, you know, if I made an account, it would be Andy High. I don't think it would be too hard for someone to just, you know, type that in and see if I also existed there. So, I mean, I agree that, you know, I think we're all one person, and I think having multiple different accounts sort of defeats the purpose, because I think people can easily link those accounts together or try to find who you are on different occasions.
Well, there are so many different platforms for social media now, with, of course, Facebook and Twitter being the two giants in this field. But we also have Pinterest and Tumblr and Instagram and all kinds of other sites where you can share things in different ways. Some sites people use aliases on. Sometimes it seems like most of the posts come from people who can't necessarily be identified as real human beings. Let's compare and contrast some of these different platforms. I think Facebook's probably the one that most people are familiar with. And I think a lot of people think of Facebook as being sort of a safe space because you control who your friends are on Facebook and the privacy settings are pretty accessible. Would you agree with that, Nathan?
Facebook is definitely the most common and mainstream, and how it's thought about, I think people have different levels of trust with it, depending on who they are. Because of its mainstream audience, you see a large pool of people using it that has skewed a lot older recently. So mom's there, grandma's there. We've all had that moment where our parents have friended us on Facebook. But to a younger audience, they're seeing it as a safe place, but not necessarily a private place, because we've all overfriended there. We've not controlled our networks as well as we should have, as we have on Twitter and Instagram, where we're following less people or connecting with a smaller pool. So I think to a younger audience, Facebook feels like, because everyone's there, because potential employers, coworkers are there, mom's there, dad's there, it's safe, but not necessarily as private as they want it to be. So we see a shift specifically among teenagers to platforms like Twitter, which ironically is the most public of platforms.
Right, I was going to say there's just nothing private about Twitter.
Yeah, and yet the perception is that maybe it's a more private space, at least to that individual, because they're simply interacting with 50 people as opposed to 600 or 1,000 friends on Facebook.
Well, what's your take on that, Andrew?
Yeah, I think it is perceived to be a safe place, but I also know there's a lot of tensions with what's going on there. You know, there's, you know, I think about something maybe like you describe it as a boundary crossing, you know, that you're, you know, I think come across this about this from, you know, college students a lot. That, you know, you're posting, you know, maybe some pictures that you don't want your parents to see, you know, what you did over the weekend and things like that. And all of a sudden your mom pops up and friends you on Facebook, and you think, oh, well, I don't know if I wanted mom to see that picture, and I don't know if I'm all that comfortable with it at the same time. And so I think that, you know, it gets at the idea of co-ownership of information, right, that, you know, I'm putting this information out there, these pictures out there, but at the same time, it's my information. I think I own this, and I get to control what happens to it, and by putting it out here publicly, I all of a sudden lose a sense of ownership over it, and all people are doing things with it that I maybe didn't intend for them to do. And so I think it is generally a safe place, because you can really crack down on a lot of the privacy settings, although I think it's still up for some debate how many people actually really use the privacy settings on something like Facebook. But I also think that's balanced between just, you know, having the information out there and people who you might not necessarily want to see it all of a sudden getting access to it.
Right. Well, and there is, on Facebook, you have the ability to untag yourself in a picture, to remove a tag so that people can't identify you. But if the tag's there, somebody could have already seen that. I mean, the information travels fast.
Absolutely. And I think that's an important rule as people, as friends, you know, develop their networks on Facebook, that idea of being careful who you're tagging in a picture. You know, I think most people have been tagged in a picture where they, just didn't look that great in it, and that's one thing. But especially if there's a picture of, you know, you may be doing things that are a bit inappropriate and you wouldn't necessarily want to put on a social network. You know, and I think, you know, people are being more and more common about, well, maybe I shouldn't tag people in those situations. Maybe I should let them know that, hey, there's this picture on here and I didn't tag you, but, I can. Or, you know, they can just tag themselves. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's an important consideration. And, again, it's sort of a tension between wanting to be out there, wanting to, you know, display yourself positively, but also, you know, trying to keep a hold of the information you really do want to put out there.
And, of course, the consequences can be very real. We had a post on our Facebook page. We asked people about some of the things that they've seen happen on Facebook that they don't think are good ideas. And Robert, who's an attorney in Iowa, said, I had a case a few months ago, a violation of a no-contact order, and I thought I could get the guy time served until the county attorney showed me screen grabs from the guy's Facebook page that showed him chugging vodka from the bottle and throwing gang signs. So there can be very real consequences to what is getting put up on Facebook, and that guy probably wasn't posting those pictures himself.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I'm curious, Nathan, do people come to you to ask about managing their own, personally managing their online profile, or do you work primarily with businesses?
We work primarily with large corporations, but there's still so much overlap, and there are always people that pull us aside and seek advice just from a personal level, whether it's someone at that company or someone in a leadership position there, or even maybe just someone we meet at a speaking event. And there seems to be a lot of stress points around these platforms from a personal standpoint. A lot of people are uncomfortable with knowing how they work and what the consequences are. So it's one of those things that you just need to fill out the platforms, get a comfort level with it, and then dive in from there.
Well, I've actually been in workplaces where there are social media guidelines for what you should and should not do on your personal Facebook page or your personal Twitter account. Is that common in organizations?
Right. So there are a lot of companies that now have social media policies or overall electronic communication policies that fold in social as part of that. And I think it's smart for a company to have that. I don't know that the best policies are probably not the ones that are too restrictive. I think a company needs to put it in black and white. What an individual can say on behalf as an official spokesperson for the company. I think there needs to be rules around that. But being heavy-handed with what the person can, how that person can self-express online is really a territory I don't know that they need to go into.
We're talking about social media etiquette this hour, some of the do's and don'ts of social media, and some of the wonderful opportunities that we get, also some of the dangers that are facing us because of these social media platforms. With me, Nathan Wright, founder of Lava Row, a digital media consulting firm in Des Moines, and Andrew High, an assistant professor at the University of Iowa's Department of Communication Studies. We'd love to hear from you as well. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about social media etiquette, some of the things that we should be doing online or can do online, things that we really shouldn't be doing online, some of the real dangers, and also some pet peeves as well. We'd like to hear from you. What drives you crazy on your Facebook feed? What drives you crazy on Twitter? 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. or post on our Facebook page. And I'm talking this hour with Andrew High, an assistant professor at the University of Iowa's Department of Communication Studies. Nathan, he's founder of Lava Row, a digital media consulting firm in Des Moines. And as far as what we do post online, why don't we talk about some of the things that we really need to stay away from, although I'm sure that a lot of people do all of these things. Nathan, what are some of the real things that you advise people to absolutely not do online?
One of my biggest pet peeves is oversharing, but more specifically, pity parties. So a feed that's just full of constant negativity, whining. So if you look at this person's feed, let's say it's on Twitter, and 9 of the 10 are just tweets complaining about this or that, then that's a quick unfollow, or not even a follow to begin with, where it becomes, unfortunately, it feels like it's that person's core being, and it's all they have to offer. So I believe in, I go back to moderation. I like to see a lot of diverse content. I like to see what people are interested in, a variety of interests, but not one specific sort of downer phase. That always gives me a quick unfollow.
Well, that's irritating to you. Is that something that you actually see creating problems for people? I mean, I can understand not wanting to see it, but do you think that they're damaging themselves?
In some sense, yes. I think these are cringe moments, cringeworthy moments. I think every time that person pops up in a feed, you're like, that person again, and it's constant. So I think it's damaging in the sense that I think people are sort of removing themselves from that friendship or that acquaintance or whatever the sort of relationship was.
Now, of course, a lot of us go through really, really difficult things in life. And if you're being an authentic self online, you're going to share a little bit about some of those things. Let's say, and I know that you've had experience with this, if you're getting a divorce and things are hard, I can imagine it would be hard not to share some of that.
Right. Grieving online, if it's a divorce or you've lost a loved one, that's completely natural and healthy. A specific example that I wanted to share was when I went through my divorce, we actually set rules on how we shared online, which I think was healthy to do. And we did it for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, out of respect for each other as human beings, but also for those mutual friends and family that we had connected with on Facebook. And during sort of the early months of the split, we just set some sort of ground rules around what we shared. So what was appropriate, what wasn't. If one of us is out, like in public on a date or something, just like, you know, staying away from sharing photos like that. Again, it was because we knew friends and family were there, still connected to us, and it was sort of still an awkward phase for those connections as well. And we also had to navigate how we connect to each other on Facebook, and we actually chose to block each other. And I know that sounds severe, but what it does is it mitigates that sort of that urge when you're in those sort of emotional raw months to seek the other person out online and kind of see what they're up to. So if you do a mutual block, then it's totally out of sight, out of mind. So that was the way we approached it.
So explain that for people who maybe have never done that. That's almost
sure.
More final than unfriending someone. That makes it so you can't even see a picture that person has posted or that person is tagged in?
Correct. So a block on Facebook is a complete and total removal of any of that person's content showing up in your feed, and also preventing that person from seeing your content and then vice versa. So it is almost like invisibility, basically.
Why did you decide that was important?
We felt that, you know, there might be those moments where one of us shares something online or something at top of mind or a very emotional moment, and we just felt it was best to separate those things or not have it showing up in our daily feeds.
Andrew, what are some of the things that you think are really important to avoid online?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the things that Nathan was talking about, I think he's hitting the nail right on the head. In particular, the issue with following you know, someone that you was a relational partner that you broke up with. There's lots of research out there, very interesting research. It says that's just a bad idea. You know, the idea being that, well, it's different than what we do face-to-face. Usually, when people break up with someone face-to-face, you know, they don't see them. They don't spend time with them very often. But online, you know, when we're using something like a Facebook, we all of a sudden have this unprecedented access to them where even if we're not seeing each other anymore, well, I can still be seeing you virtually, you know, pretty clearly all the time. And there's a number of negative outcomes that results from those sort of behaviors. You know, it's things like people stay sad and depressed longer when they follow their ex-partner on Facebook. Their self-esteem is lowered. They sort of have a more sexual longing for the partner. They just can't get over the relationship. They can't improve themselves or move on. So in that sense, following someone who you or being friends with someone who you know used to date or used to be in a relationship with is really quite harmful for your ability to get over and to move on with life. And so, you know, blocking someone or sort of, you know, cutting them off cold turkey may actually be very functional and very healthy for people to do But at the same time, I think it's a very difficult thing to do. You know, I think you're always tempted to check in and stay in touch with that person. You just always wonder, you know, what is that person doing? And you always have that, you know, wanting to know in the back of your head.
Well, we have this social network online, and, you know, obviously some of the people who are our friends in the virtual world are our real friends, and it makes sense to kind of lean on these people when you need help, when you're having an emotional difficulty. But, Andrew, you see a lot of pitfalls to that, to leaning on your online social network to help you out.
I do, and I really think it depends on how you use a particular online context. So, for example, I really think that it depends on the norms of the context, right? And, you know, you were discussing earlier about some companies or some specific contexts of online communication have very explicit and stated rules out there, do this, don't do this, in terms of things that people should behave. But another very important way that we learn how to behave on the Internet is simply just by observing other people, right? You know, I know what I can post on my Facebook. I know what I can tweet about, because I see what other people are doing, and that there develops norms and rules, implicit rules for how to communicate.
All right, even though I think I see a lot of things that I don't want to do online. We are going to go to the phones here. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. We're talking about social media etiquette this hour. We'd love to hear from you as well. What are your pet peeves? What drives you crazy online? 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Post on our Facebook page or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Colin is on the line from Des Moines. Hi, Colin.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I actually have a question. I have a job where basically I work for a small nonprofit, and the community that we serve, I am a part of. So whatever I do online, it's kind of seen that I'm representing the agency as a whole. And I have talked to my supervisors about it, and just kind of looking for a way to find any, you know, draw the line or, you know, find a balance. But it's proving to be difficult because it's difficult, actually. So I don't even know how to ask the questions. I don't even know what to do at this point.
Well, Nathan, can you help us out a little bit here?
Sure. So it sounds like you haven't approached the topic yet, but I wouldn't be afraid to do that, to ask your management or your leadership people in the organization to define, first of all, do they have any sort of policy to begin with, and what is that, and just have an open discussion about pitfalls, positive benefits that you could get out of it. It sounds like you're a little nervous to approach it, so maybe approach it with a more of an sort of an opportunity spin, like what can I do online to help this organization? When doing so, you know, I'm still connecting to these other people in the community, so what should I watch out for? So I think a lot of it's in just how you approach the conversation first and foremost. Get them to define it first.
Colin, are you finding yourself just second-guessing yourself a lot and changing the kinds of things that you post online?
I do, because basically, there has been discussion where just anything that I post can be seen as a something that the agency might not approve of, or that I'm representing the agency, because I'm kind of known in the community that we serve, and just basically any comments that I make can be construed as something that the agency is releasing, even though I am signed on under my personal account. And so it is kind of hard to navigate that, you know, where does my privacy start, and where does my private or my public life, you know, end. So,
Andrew, do you have any insight for Colin here?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, as Colin is finding, there's definitely an increasing blur between what is public and what is private. But I think there's some things you can do there. You know, first is certainly, you know, understand what the organization wants to do and what their goals are and how they feel like they need to be represented online. But also, I'd suggest just use the benefits of the channel, right? One of the benefits of communicating online or posting on something on Facebook is that we don't have to just blurt out the first thing that we, you know, think of or something like that. That you can really take some time and, you know, really edit a post or really, you know, focus on the language and try to really craft a message that both represents, you know, who you are, how you want to present yourself, but also make sure that that's in, you know, compliance or along the lines of the goals that the organization wants to do. And, you know, I think by really being careful about wording and really being careful about crafting a message, that those two things don't necessarily have to, you know, be at opposition to one another.
And Nathan, I know you have some thoughts about posting thoughtfully.
Right. So I like what Andrew said about just taking a, you know, taking that extra beat to think about what you're posting online and not sort of just vomiting words into the internet, the first things that come to your mind. So that's one of the things when I look back to my old posts. I use this app called TimeHop, which shows me what I was posting 4 or 5 years ago on platforms. And it's an interesting and very harsh mirror into myself to what I was doing back then. And so that was one of those learning lessons for me, is I could see how I've evolved or in some cases how I haven't over time in terms of what I share and how I do it. And 4 or 5 years ago, I was sharing anything and everything and not taking that extra moment to just blurt things out. And my most harsh learning lesson was I was on an airplane to Austin, Texas once, and it's about 5 years ago, I believe. And there was a very loud baby sitting behind me, of course, and shrieking the whole way. And it was the parents weren't there, the grandparents. I think it was everyone's first time on a plane, and I was so annoyed when I got off the plane. I tweeted, "Is it wrong to want to punch a baby?" And that's not cool that wasn't in line with what my audience, you know, really expected from me. It was one of those learning moments where I heard from a lot of people, like, are you joking? Are you serious? If you are joking, that's not even funny. So it was one of those moments where that's funny to 5 or 10 of my closest friends, but not sort of a general population.
Right, and you are not a baby puncher.
No, so I do want to say that I've never done that, and I don't condone it.
Well, Colin, thank you so much for your call. I want to talk about politics, because politics is something that a lot of people tweet about, a lot of people post about. It's something that a lot of people care deeply about. How do you feel about all of those political conversations going on online, Andrew?
Yeah, politics are definitely up there among, if not the most sticky hot button issue. It's definitely up there. I can think of, you know, my own family, in fact, posting about things, you know, this past election season. I think we saw more social media than we ever saw. And, you know, seeing particular members of my family post things and just thinking, oh, man, I really wish you wouldn't have posted that, not wanting to be a part of it at all. I personally tend to keep my political thoughts to myself when it comes to social media. I don't think, you know, people are necessarily accessing my Facebook page because they want to know my thoughts about politics. There are better people who are more well-spoken when it comes to political issues than I am. But, I think that goes back to the caller, right? In the workplace, if you're expressing political opinions that are counter to your organization, that can really be, a hot-button issue for a lot of people. And it can lead to some very real negative consequences. So personally, I would advocate, you know, restraint and realize that these are very important issues, and I don't mean to imply that they're not, and these are important parts of people's lives and what they're interested in. But at the same time, it's one of those things where people's opinions can so very quickly become so polarized, and especially if you don't have the chance to clarify a comment that you made, that it can really lead to a lot of troubles for people.
Well, and as a journalist, I never post anything political on anything,
sure.
Because that would be a compromising situation for me. But, of course, I see a lot of this go past, and I often have the thought, does anything ever get solved on Facebook? Do people ever really consider other people's opinions? Because it does become so polarized, and, you know, people are just restating and restating and restating their own opinions in more and more inflammatory ways most often.
Oh, absolutely. You can have an innocent comment that has some political implications on Facebook, and then all of a sudden end up into a yelling, screaming, flaming, you know, conversation with people, and you just thought you were, I don't know, sharing a link to a news story that interested you. And to me, it's not the venue where I want to have those sort of discussions. I think the internet can be a wonderful resource for a variety of conversations, and in fact can be better than what we do in our face-to-face lives a lot of time. But for politics or to solve some, you know, have a serious debate about a political issue, it's not the place for me. People become so self-centered and just solely focused on vehemently defending their own agenda or their own viewpoints that I don't think anything really gets considered or really hashed out. I also personally do the same thing in the classroom. You know, I think for better or worse, students probably get a glimpse into my political viewpoints based on examples I use. But the classroom, the internet are not forums where I feel like I need to really devoutly express my belief in you know, one political venue or you know, issue or another.
And we're going to take a short break here. We'll be back to our conversation in just a moment. I'm talking with Andrew High. He's an assistant professor at the University of Iowa's Department of Communication Studies. Nathan Wright is also here. He's founder of Lava Row, a digital media consulting firm in Des Moines. This hour, we're talking about do's and don'ts of social media, some of the dangers inherent in social media, and some of our pet peeves as well. We'd love to hear from you with your questions and your comments. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can post on our Facebook page. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about social media etiquette, and you can join our conversation via social media. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can post on our Facebook page, or, of course, you can call us, 866-780-9100, or you can, email? You can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me is Nathan Wright, founder of Lava Row, a digital media consulting firm in Des Moines. Andrew High is also here. He's an assistant professor at the University of Iowa's Department of Communication Studies. And Andrew, we were talking about politics before the break. Something else that I've seen on my own personal feed, I friended a distant family member, and they like to inject all kinds of really vitriolic political comments into comments on, say, a cute picture of my kids. And so I did end up unfriending him. Also, I've had people just post things to my Facebook page. They'll post a meme or something like that has a political bent. And of course, I'll delete it no matter what the politics of it are. But people do seem to like to reach out in those ways as well.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, why people do things like that, I don't really understand. If you're posting a cute picture of your kid and all of a sudden a pro political stance pops up, that's not carrying the conversation forward in a way that I, you know, would see to be a productive, you know, contribution to the conversation. Why people do those things, I don't know. I think it's a lot of attention seeking. I think it's a lot of agenda setting. People trying to get their message across, but you know, there are effective places and times and ways to get messages across, and then there are, you know, certainly very ineffective ways to do so as well. And, you know, I think if we want to have discussions about these things, doing so in the proper place and the proper venue could be very, very productive in some ways. You know, the internet can be a great place to carry on a political conversation, but doing so in a series of comments about a picture of a child probably isn't the best place to do that, in my mind. And so I really think it's about, you know, just realizing, you know, what is the conversation about and contributing to the conversation. And, if you're going to talk about those things, try to do it with people who are interested in it. Try to do it in a space where, you know, people can really get involved and really devote the time to having the interaction, rather than just simply bashing the other people's point of view and promoting your own agenda. And I think, I mean, that happens politically, it happens socially, it happens just with personal issues that you're interested in. And you get to the point where you're thinking, there's no reason to be posting this. It's not continuing a conversation at all. A quick personal example, a colleague of mine recently forwarded me a blog about mothers monopolizing Facebook posts. And in fact, it was, you know, someone would post a cute picture of a kid or something like that, and then a mom would all of a sudden get on and talk about how hard her life is with her children or how wonderful her kids are compared to somebody else, you think, well, you've just completely derailed my conversation. This wasn't about you at all. I was sharing a picture of my child. And you know, so I don't think it happens just politically. I think it happens with anything, but it's you know, it all comes down to being sensitive to the conversation that you're having.
Well, and Nathan, another hot-button issue, of course, is religion, something people also feel extremely strongly about. Do you advise people about whether or not to post about their religious beliefs?
Well, to each their own, and I think a little bit is okay, again, going back to moderation. But politics and religion are just those things as humans, we've always had this sort of built-in rule to stay away from those things at the family reunion, because you're just not going to go down a positive path. It can go bad pretty quickly. So I think religion, just put that together with politics as things that if you get a bit extreme with it online, you may either alienate yourself or find yourself in some sort of echo chamber, or inspire all sorts of nasty comments.
We've had a few people post about people friending them that they don't necessarily know, or coworkers friending them and not knowing whether they should accept those friend requests or not. Do you have any guidelines for that, Nathan?
I think the guidelines are specific to each platform. So I have certain rules personally on Facebook. I do have to know the person or have some context or have met them. I'm a little bit more open on LinkedIn. If I don't know someone, but it might be some sort of business opportunity down the road and I can verify their existence so they don't look like some sort of spammer, I will accept the request. So I think it's different per platform, and people have to develop their own comfort levels with what's okay and what's not okay. I think a general rule on Facebook is if you don't know the person and you cannot recall how you met them, then just leave it pending or delete it.
All right. And so if you leave it pending, a lot of people feel like that's rude. Do you worry about that?
I personally don't stress about that. I don't think that people are so wrapped up in whether you're going to accept their friend requests or not. So I would hope that there's not drama around it. There sometimes is. I've been confronted once about someone I unfriended on Facebook actually approached me and mentioned, "Hey, I see we're not friends anymore," which I thought was strange because it was a mild acquaintance to begin with, and I think that's my right to control my network. Sometimes there can be drama with it, but I think for the most part, people don't need to spend so many hours stressing over should I accept, should I not. If it's a coworker, that's your own comfort level. You have to develop those, your own radar and your own settings there.
Well, and Andrew, you have some advice for people who get confronted about unfriending somebody on Facebook, right?
Well, you know, I think it can be a potentially awkward type of interaction because Facebook doesn't. You know, it's not like you send a message, hey, you were unfriended by this other person. You know, you sort of find out, you know, by just looking at the person's profile and saying, hey, you know, I thought we were friends, but all of a sudden we're not friends anymore. What the heck happened? You know, and I think there's a way to have that conversation, and it's probably not to do it publicly on someone's Facebook wall. You know, I think it's to have the conversation, you know, were we not friends? What happened? You know, to our relationship, and you know, I would hope that people would answer honestly. It is certainly up to them whether they want to have, you know, thousands of Facebook friends or really use the venue to have a legitimate group of friends who they can, you know, literally, you know, care about in some cases, and as well as to just make it manageable in terms of who they can speak to. Although I do think most cases when people are unfriended, in my experience anyway, it sounds like people blame it on just a glitch in Facebook or something like that. Like, oh, wait, we're unfriended? Oh, it must be Facebook must have done something weird there. Or I have another friend who blames things like that on her daughter. Oh, really? My daughter, you know, had my phone and must have unfriended you by accident. So, you know, I think people play it off pretty skillfully without hopefully making a big relational fight over the whole thing.
Now, there's an interesting, a lot of people get frustrated with comments. And of course, if you look at any website with any article posted in the comments section, things just can really get out of hand. You see that in social media as well. And we had this comment from Michael on our Facebook page. The anonymity of the internet allows rude and crude people the ability to write whatever they want with no regard for other people's feelings or thoughts. If you then write something scolding such a person for their behavior, that person might never be back to read it. As for grammar and spelling, is grammar even taught in schools these days? All right, that gets us a little bit off topic. But there are so many comments posted that are anonymous, although, again, in some social media avenues, a lot of those comments aren't really anonymous. You may be posting on a page, but all your friends can see that you posted on that page. Is that something that people need to be very wary about doing?
I think anonymity is definitely a double-edged sword when it comes to the internet. You know, on the one hand, anonymity, I mean, it's a defining quality of the internet. It's a wonderful part of any communication on the internet because it enables people to speak, and it enables the people who may be disenfranchised the most in a normal face-to-face interaction to really have a voice and to really assert their opinion. And so in that case, it's wonderful. On the other hand, you know, we've seen, you know, some terrible incidents and a lot of harm and consequences in people's lives because people, you know, posted things anonymously. And I don't want to get too off topic, but that's where we get a lot of things with, you know, cyber stalking and you know, following people and spamming and flaming and things like that. And, you know, it's a lot of unhealthy things. And I know there's, you know, been debates about, you know, how do we control the anonymity on the internet? Should we make everyone pseudonymous instead of being anonymous? And you know, how do we deal with this? And so, you know, again, I think it boils down to being sensitive in a conversation and to realizing what you're trying to do as a communicator and presenting yourself, how you would really like to be seen, and to using your anonymity in a helpful and a healthy way. You know, letting you express your opinions, letting you communicate with people who you might not normally communicate with, but also realize that it's another human being on the other end of the line, and that they deserve some respect as much as you would, and to not get carried away with anonymity.
And Andrew, you actually deleted your Twitter account, right?
I did. Yeah.
Why did you do that?
Why did I do it? Partially because of the grammar thing, honestly, based on the last comment. It gave me a headache if I read more than a few tweets. And honestly, I just personally felt like I didn't have that much I needed to tweet. I felt like my Facebook was more than enough for what I needed to say. I personally don't have a desire to keep everyone filled in with what I'm doing every 5 minutes during my day. You know, I think for certain companies or for certain individuals, Twitter can be a wonderful thing. For me, it just didn't have it, and quite frankly, I got frustrated with the grammar and having to read it. I don't know, maybe that makes me sound old-fashioned, but it just was a mess of characters to me.
You're not a big fan of hashtags either.
You know, I just get overwhelmed with a lot of hashtags.
So let's talk. We have just a few minutes left. Let's talk about using social media in positive ways. Nathan, what do you think social media can do for you that you can't do in other ways?
I think it's a great way to augment your professional self. You can have this presence online, or you're easily findable. I mean, it gives so much more rich context to you as a human being if you are in some sort of situation where you're looking to change careers or jobs. I just think now more than ever we have these amazing tools that go so far beyond a paper resume. So I think if used well, not necessarily. I don't think everything you do online needs to be professionally strategic, although some approach it that way. But I think it can definitely enhance career opportunities.
Andrew, what do you think it adds to our lives?
I think it can add a ton to our lives, and I think the biggest thing is our ability to selectively present ourselves. Right? Never before have we had context of communication where we can selectively present ourselves so carefully. We can edit out all that we think is bad about ourselves, and we can really enhance the things that we value and think are really important and wonderful about ourselves. So it's sort of a stripping away of a lot of the superficiality of interaction and focusing on really who we are, who we want to be as individuals. And it's beyond that. I mean, if you need help with a problem, if you need advice or comfort, you now have an expanded network of not just your friends who you see on a daily basis, but, you know, potentially millions of other people with advice and resources and emotional reassurance that you wouldn't have otherwise.
We have gotten some pet peeves from people on our Facebook page. This is from Heather. She says she has a bunch. One of them is the perpetuation of urban myths. That's something you see all the time, people posting and reposting things that just simply aren't true. She also points out vague booking, which is one of my big pet peeves, where somebody puts up a status update where they want you to ask about it. I'm so upset, that kind of thing, but they don't tell you why, and they never tell you why. She also says posting regarding overly personal matters, so oversharing, and show-offs on social media. I think we've seen a lot of that as well. And we got this from Caitlin. For high schoolers talking poorly about their jobs, teachers, friends, for college students, drunk photos and comments, for moms, overload sharing their child's daily schedule. It almost seems like we should have some sort of primer for people as they get into using social media. I mean, you think about high schoolers complaining about their jobs. That's a bad precedent to set. Nathan, can you teach people? Can you learn how to use social media when you start out?
Well, I think the primer is watching how others use it, and that's sort of your first context to it. I would say that these networks, specifically for a younger generation, is helping them, some of them, evolve a little bit quicker in terms of their how mature they are with the platforms and understanding what can happen. I'm seeing them learn faster the do's and don'ts than I did because they have access to these platforms at an age. If I had Twitter when I was a teenager, I can't even imagine the disasters that would have happened. And yet,
isn't that scary though to think about? Because of course, you know, if you create something under your own name, it will last for a very long time. It's hard to just really delete all of that. Do you fear for teenagers?
No, I think everyone's allowed to screw up, and teenagers always will. Whatever technology you give them, they'll find some way to abuse it or develop workarounds so we don't see how they're abusing it. But kids are smart and they're crafty, and everyone makes mistakes.
And what's your number one pet peeve, Nathan?
My number one pet peeve is also grammar. So just coming from a professional sense, but also individuals, I just wonder what failed along the way when adults are just not understanding simple things like the difference between you are and your.
It's just so one. Or where to put apostrophes.
Right. Yeah. It's everywhere. So that always makes me cringe.
All right. Nathan Wright is founder of Lava Row, a digital media consulting firm in Des Moines. Nathan, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And Andrew, I think we already hit your major pet peeves, grammar and hashtags, right?
Yeah, they're definitely up there. And that and simply just being addicted to it. You know, there's nothing I hate more than going out to dinner with someone and having them post the entire time or take pictures of their food instead of having a conversation with me. I think we need to realize that there are also people in our face-to-face world, too, who are pretty special people.
All right. Andrew, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much.
Andrew High is an associate professor in the University of Iowa's Department of Communication Studies. We've been talking about social media etiquette this hour. Talk of Iowa is produced by Sarah Bowden, Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Technical support today from John Pemble in Des Moines. And Ben Kiefer, host of River to River, our noon show, is here in the studio with me today. Hey, Ben.
Hi, Charity.
All of social media is your pet peeve, right?
I love that hour. There was some good stuff there. Good insights. I'm glad some other people think the same things that I am. Later today at noon, Charity, you might have caught last week that the governor announced that Iowa is establishing another sister state relationship. And this is, I believe it's ninth, and this one will be with the once war-torn country of Kosovo in southeastern Europe. And so we're going to talk to some Iowa National Guard people who have served in Kosovo to get a feeling for that country and find out what is this sister state, sister city.
Yeah, if we have nine, must do something, right?
Yeah, well, what do they do for us? That's coming up at noon, Charity.
All right, Ben, thank you very much. Ben Kiefer, River to River, on the air today at noon. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow, a special broadcast at the 10 o'clock hour from Harvest Public Media. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.